Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, the nuts and bolts of practice basics.
Is there a difference between rest and observe? The reason I have the question, I've been taught to observe, watch my breath, for instance.
Yes.
And in my mind, the way I think, I watch it, I observe it with, and I don't deal with it or experience it, I just watch it.
Yeah.
When you say rest, which is the first time I've heard that expression in this context, that to me says immediately that I'm going to experience it. I'm going to involve myself in it in some way. So I guess my question is, what is the difference between the two? So that I can get some understanding of what either means. Maybe it's the same. Am I making any sense?
You're making a great deal of sense. And I think it's a very important question. A great deal of meditation instruction is given in terms of watch the breath. Put your attention on this object, etc. Some of this may be translation problem. I'm not sure. In my own practice, I found that the distancing that occurs with that instruction very problematic for all kinds of reasons. Other people, they don't have any problem with it, but for me it was a problem. And when I started to just rest in my experience of breathing, as opposed to trying to watch the breath, there was a lot less struggle. I could actually start resting. And as I rested, quality of attention develops in a way that it didn't in the other approach. So, yes, there's a difference, I think. And I found that this notion of resting in our experience is very helpful because it's something I can easily take into my life. Whatever's happening, I can just be in that, if you follow. And for me also, it gets rid of the tension that I found was created when I tried to, just as we were discussing in several of the questions already, when I was trying to observe the breath, I kept having to push this other stuff away. And that made a lot of struggle. When I rested in the experience, I didn't have to push any of that stuff away because that was all part of the experience, which is basically what I've been trying to say today. But as I rested more and more deeply, I don't know whether any of that stuff goes away, but it ceases to distract. And that's makes a difference. Does this help?
Yes.
Okay. So, question up here. I think we'll have to make this the last one.
According to what I've learned, it sounds like for her question, isn't it that the one-pointed meditation of watching the breath is shamatha, and the all-inclusive resting is vipassana, which are two different levels of meditation? That the first is the calm abiding, that the shamatha is given as an instruction to calm the mind so that the resting and the vipassana can begin to happen.
That's very interesting. I think there's a difference in the way the same terminology is used in Theravada and Mahayana from your question. What you're describing would, in my own training, be described as two different aspects of shamatha. Yes. The first aspect is what is usually translated as mindfulness, which I don't like as a word anymore. And I know this is how it's defined in the Theravadan and the Mahayana tradition. It's defined as the mind joining with the object of attention. Not focused on, but joining with. And that, to me, comes about through resting. So the resting quality is very much there. As that resting quality develops, another aspect of attention starts. And we call that awareness, which is defined as, roughly, knowing what is going on. And it's the difference between meditating in a closet and meditating in an open field. That's a subjective feeling. And when that quality arises, then there's much less struggle, because you know what's going on, and there's a deeper level of resting. And you're still resting in the experience of the object, but you also know everything that's going on. Those two together form shamatha. What is called insight in Mahayana, in my own training, is another quality yet, which basically grows out of the awareness that I just mentioned, that expansion, but takes it a step further. Because it's possible to rest, but then you learn to look in the resting. And we do this in various ways. I'm doing this with some of the questions today. But you're looking, basically, at what is this experience? Not trying to answer the question, but to look at it. Or, more precisely, into it. So there's a resting and a looking. Now, in the beginning, when people start to look, their attention destabilizes very, very quickly, which is why that resting quality is very important. As practice matures, then it becomes possible to rest in the looking and look in the resting. And now there's quite a different quality to practice.
So, I'll start over. Regardless of where you're meditating, either in the middle of a forest or in the city or in a group of 10 people or one person, there's always distractions. And I was just wondering how you can deal with that in meditating, when meditating.
Yeah. I think this is very important. When we say there are distractions, it's because we have an idea of how things should be. And something keeps pulling us away, right? Is that fair? Okay.
Yes.
So, what if you drop the idea of how things should be?
Okay.
And there's just how things are. Okay. So here we are, and, you know, we've got cars going by outside, and we could have motorbikes too, just to make it a little juicier. Or police sirens, or what have you. That's just stuff that's happening in the environment. Now, have you ever gone on a walk on a fall day when the wind has been up and there's blowing leaves all around?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Do you find that the leaves distract you from walking?
No.
Why is that?
Because they're part of the natural, they're part of the path, I guess.
Yeah, and you just walk and the leaves blow around. So why don't you, so we can practice the same way, we practice meditation the same way. Now, we're very used to walking, but have you ever watched a very small child when the leaves start blowing around?
They try to chase it every
single Yeah, time. It's the same thing, isn't it? They're chasing all, and they get all confused and, you know, leaves are going around all over the place, and they don't know what to do. But, you know, being the sober, serious adults that we are, you know, we just walk, and the leaves blow around. And so, behind this, there's the whole idea of why are we meditating? Why do you want to practice meditation? Yeah, well, I'm talking to you, so. And you know, nobody else here will have the same reason as you do, so this is your time.
To try to find some quiet and unattachment.
Some quiet and non-attachment?
Non-attachment.
Okay. And so the way I'm understanding that is you meditate so you aren't being pulled all over the place by everything you experience. Okay. Isn't this really like that little child? Okay. So, rather than, I mean, I remember when I first came to this area, it was back in the mid-80s, I was invited down to work with a group in Orange County. And so there we were, about 8 or 10 people, and they wanted to talk about meditation. And they practiced meditation in an apartment, and the door would be closed and make sure the double sliding door was closed, so there was absolutely no noise whatsoever. It's like trying to calm the wind down, you know, so the leaves don't blow. What was great is that they had one of these old telephone answering machines, so when it went on, it was just, you heard all of these gears and cogs, you know, this is way before digital or anything like that, just grinding away. But I've always thought it's great to meditate on a street corner, because that's life. And the problem here comes if we try to control things and make them a certain way, rather than, okay, here is everything, and I'm just going to be here. And I'm going to quietly rest in my experience of breathing. And it doesn't matter whether there's cars going by on the street outside. It doesn't matter whether there's planes going overhead. And it doesn't matter whether there's some tune running in my head, which is just ordinarily driving me nuts. That tune can run in my head, and that's fine. I'm just going to continue to rest in my breath. And every now and then, I'm going to trip, just like the little kid. And I'll end up in the tune. But sometimes, as I was saying at the beginning of this, there's that moment of recognition, and then I just come back and I continue to rest with my breath. But I don't try to get rid of the tune. You follow?
Yes.
And maybe there's an itch in my leg. Okay. So that's there, and I get really obsessed with it. Does that happen to anybody else? Okay. And, okay, so, oh, then I keep coming back to the breath. And sometimes really difficult feelings may come up. And it's really difficult to stay with them. But here's where meditation is a bit like doing exercise. You know, you build up strength. You can't do it all perfectly. That's why we call it practice. Because, you know, the nice thing about practice is you get to fail at it over and over again and it doesn't matter. You know, it's not like our life depends on it. There's a thing in old Tibetan texts which say, meditate as if someone was holding a sword at your neck. I don't find this is a good way to meditate at all. And I remember one of my teachers, who was just a wonderful Tibetan Lama, who knew everything under the sun. Whenever you asked him a question, you got a two-hour answer. And one day he was talking to us about meditation. He said, here's how I was trained. We'd come into the main temple hall, and we would sit down. These were all, you know, monks, basically in their teenage years. And we'd sit down, and then a string was strung. And we were all positioned so that our nose just touched the string. And every time the string moved, we were all beaten. And then he leaned forward and he said, this is not how you learn to meditate. This is how you learn to sit still. And then he went on and said to us, very much what I'm saying to you. You have this experience. Rest in the experience. And yes, there's going to be all kinds of things, but they're only a problem if you regard them as a problem. If they're just stuff like the leaves blowing in the wind or whatever, then it's just leaves blowing in the wind, and you do what you're there to do, which is to rest in the breath. And yes, you fall down, and then you pick yourself up and do that. And that's the learning and the building the muscles and so forth. Does this make sense to you?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Do you, a follow-up?
Say that again?
A follow-up question there? Is this?
No, just stuff to think about. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Linda, Tybee Island, Georgia. I'm working with the primary practice off the cushion. I can do simple tasks for minutes at a time, but this doesn't work with reading. Sometimes all sensory information moves to the background as I engage with the reading. Other times I'll suddenly, effortlessly drop into an opening with ideas or issues in clear focus. Other sensations are in the background, but they're dim, almost transparent. Again, I'm losing clarity and detail. Is this a capacity problem, or am I going about it wrong?
The primary practice you refer to is a way of progressively opening to our experience. It begins with opening to the sensory sensations, that is sight and sound and touch and even taste and smell, and then opening to the internal material, thoughts, emotions, values, beliefs, and so forth, and then opening our heart to that whole field of experience, and then opening to the experience of awareness itself. And this is something that, as you noted here, one practices on and off the cushion. It's a way of experiencing our lives completely and transforming the experience of whatever arises into attention. So it's a very effective practice, and it sounds like you've made some good progress here. I would say the difficulty here is primarily about capacity. To be able to maintain the primary practice while reading is no trivial task. And the fact that you're able to do it at all indicates that you've been doing some very good work here. So I don't have the sense from what you sent to me that you're doing anything wrong. I think it is more a case of just continuing practice. not trying too hard, as you just making a consistent effort. As you say, sometimes all the sensory information moves to the background as you engage with the reading. Well, yes, that happens. And when you notice that happens, then you can open and include the sensory information again. And so it's something that you work at patiently and consistently rather than trying to make it be a certain way. You notice when the quality of attention goes dull, then you re-energize and regenerate the clarity. I would caution you about trying to hold on to states of attention. I've generally found that holding on almost always results in some form of depression. Rather, when the quality of attention dissipates or disintegrates, then start again and build it up through progressive opening rather than trying to hold on to something that has already passed.
Janaki in California. You say that we should experience what arises when we practice. When we are doing basic breath meditation and something arises, something like a disturbing emotion or even overwhelming dullness, how do we work with that in conjunction with experiencing the breath? At what point, if any, do we step into the emotion, etc., and abandon the breath? And at what point do we return to the breath?
When we first start practicing resting attention on the breath, most of us find that our attention keeps falling off the breath. We get caught up in emotion or thinking or whatever, just as you describe. But as our quality of our attention develops, we then find it possible to rest with the breath, and we are aware of thoughts coming and going on their own. And as our attention continues to develop, we become capable of resting with the breath and experiencing emotions coming and going of their own. So, rather than move from the breath to the emotion, I think the better way is, as we rest in the breath, we're able to include more and more of our experience. So if we first begin with the breath, and then we can include the bodily sensations, and then we maybe include thoughts when they do come, and emotions when they do come. And we don't try to block or control any of this. We just continue to rest with the breath, but we're open to experiencing what arises. Now, many people think that as soon as something arises, they get lost in the experience. And that's right, they get lost in the experience, they get lost in the thinking. That's not meditation. One's lost all attention at that point, and one's caught up. So I don't mean when I say rest in the breath and experience what arises, I don't mean that you just forget the breath at some point. You actually continue to be aware of the breath and aware of the body breathing, and you experience everything else all at the same time. Ajahn Chah, who's a very great Theravadan teacher of the last century, once summarized his approach to practice very simply. He said, put a chair in the center of the room. Sit in the chair. And see who comes to visit. So, that's what I suggest.
Thanks. Okay. Un-
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.